You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Well, new variants, a much bigger second wave, record daily cases. COVID remains the dark cloud over the country and the world the second week into the new year. That's as millions of South Africans return to work today, wondering what 2021 holds in store for the economy. One of the most important issues is whether South Africans will be able to access the COVID-19 vaccine at sufficient scale to save lives and be able to do away with the state of disaster and the risk-adjusted levels that have been hampering business and the economy since March of last year. As the country gears up to roll out the Oxford AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine to overworked and emotionally strained frontline healthcare workers, questions remain over government's logistical readiness to reach the targeted 1.2 million strong health workforce within the next 2 months. President Cyril Ramaphosa said last week that money will never be a problem again when COVID-19 vaccine has to be bought. In an interview over the weekend, he was asked whether government was now adjusting its message in response to the public's outrage after it was initially said that the vaccine would only be administered here in the second quarter of this year. Ramaphosa said government had always had a plan. So what is that plan and what are the timelines and rollout strategies? Let's welcome our guest, Dr. Anban Pillay, Deputy Director General responsible for health regulation and sector-wide procurement of essential medicines in the Health Department, and Professor Alex van den Heerfer, Chair in the field of Social Security Systems Administration and Management Studies at the Wits School of Governance. Dr. Pillay, firstly, what are we seeing in the numbers? Because obviously, I think it's widely recognized that the second wave seems to be a lot worse than the first wave. What are you seeing through the hospitals that the department administers?
We're certainly seeing higher levels of bed occupancy and huge demands, particularly on the ICU beds, higher utilization of oxygen. I think the three oxygen suppliers have been stretched to the limit. They've even redirected some of the industrial supply to try and cope with the demand. So that we've certainly seen more numbers and proportionally more going into hospitals. So I think that there's been higher levels of transmission, certainly, with this new wave that we've had, the second wave, that is. Yeah. So, and it's moved from, you know, the Eastern Cape to the Western Cape. It's now, I think, predominantly in KZN, and Gauteng is also experiencing quite significant numbers, but I think Gauteng is going to get far worse over time. I do anticipate that as this spread continues, that we're probably going to have another wave if we don't manage our social distancing, wear use of masks, etc. What has been very interesting is that there's been a lot of pressure on the private hospital beds in relative terms. And in quite a few of the provinces, we've received patients from private hospital into the public hospital. And our usual model has been that we would transfer patients from public into private because we usually had beds available. It seems the opposite is happening at this stage. We need to just understand that a little bit better.
Professor van den Heerfer, what could explain the rise now of stress in the private sector versus the public sector when we look at this second wave and what we're seeing, a far more transmutable variant of SARS-CoV-2?
Yeah, it's difficult to sort of understand why the numbers are what they are. In the first surge, the private hospital sector actually had more inpatients than the public sector as well. And so there's a very large number of people in the private sector on medical schemes that are actually being infected. But when you examine the excess death information, it suggests that in fact we had far higher numbers of people who should have gone to hospital and didn't. And so there's a question as to whether or not the public hospitals are underutilized. So there may very well be a transfer of patients from private to public, as they are more likely to come forward, but the public sector may in fact not be receiving all the patients that it should. And that's kind of difficult to understand without analyzing each individual catchment area and what's going on in the community dynamics. But it's a usual picture.
No, I just wanted to say that the point Alex makes is something we've been experiencing, where people are COVID positive, they're sick. And then we get a call to say the person's having difficulty breathing, and we're saying, well, that person needs to go into hospital, and say, well, I'm scared to go into hospital. And I'm saying, well, you know, there's not much you can do at home. And given that you have COVID, I don't see any other risk for you. So it's interesting that the public are quite afraid to go into hospital, and we really need to encourage them to do so early, because going in late is far more catastrophic.
And I think that links through to the vaccine as well, because what we're picking up in the Ipsos polls is that there are a large number of South Africans who have already said they don't want to receive a vaccine. They're fearful. All of these myths and conspiracy theories around 5G and the general anti-vaxxer sentiment. But we'll come back to that. When we started the top of this this vaccine question, when it comes to the vaccine, Dr. Pillay, we were first told to expect the rollout of the vaccine towards the end of the second quarter of this year. It then seemed that we saw a bit of an about turn, and the announcement by the health minister then that we'll secure from the Serum Institute in India these doses to help vaccinate frontline healthcare workers from as early as January into February. Why the about turn? And it does seem like there has been mixed messaging around the rollout strategy from government.
Thanks for that question. And so I think it's important, if you look at the president's announcement, he had indicated that COVAX had said to us that we should expect deliveries of doses in quarter two. They're still committed to giving us deliveries in quarter two. They've also said they would try to give us some small amounts in quarter one, but it's not going to be fairly significant. These doses that we're getting now in January and February are doses that are coming out of the bilateral agreements that we've been pursuing from last year. So we were always going to do that. And if you heard the president in his last address, he said that we're pursuing a number of bilateral deals. We can't announce them because they're not firmed up, meaning that the companies have not signed off on the dotted line. So if we started announcing them without, you know, actually having a formal agreement in place, that would create an inappropriate expectation. So the intention was always that we would have these bilateral deals. But companies were very reluctant to sign off on the dotted line, I assume because they have a number of other commitments and they didn't want to do so. So when we got this agreement with the Serum Institute, when we announced it, and I think a few others will probably come through fairly soon in the next few days or so, and I think we'll then get a better sense about all of the other bilateral volumes that will come through and the timing on them.
Now, when it comes to those non-disclosure agreements, obviously we're talking about a vaccine. It's a public good, and many South Africans are very anxious about when we'll start to see the vaccine being rolled out. Why the level of secrecy? One can understand non-disclosure agreements in terms of sensitive commercial arrangements, but surely there could be some level of communication to at least assure the public that government is entering into these bilaterals and work is being done behind the scenes.
No, I think we would certainly be keen to share information. You know, we're very keen on transparency. It's part of our legislation, etc. But the non-disclosure agreements from companies make it very clear that nothing can be disclosed until there is an agreement in place. And so it makes it very difficult for us. And at the end of the day, we're negotiating with people that need to supply us with vaccine. The worst thing we can do is breach the agreement and then them walking away. They're at this stage the ones with the vaccine, and we're the ones wanting to buy. So I think it's important that we comply with the requirements. I think globally we need to at some point address this issue of non-disclosure agreements. It's caused a lot of problems in terms of secrecy. I think what you would have seen one minister in Europe tweeting the prices that were paid, were later denied by companies. And the prices that we've been presented with are obviously much higher than that. And there are various reasons for that. So I think there's a need for transparency, particularly around the volumes as well. We don't know if countries are hoarding volumes or they just placed orders, etc., while we're battling to get the volumes out of companies. So I think that transparency is important. But at this stage, given that the stock is with companies, it would be very difficult for us to breach a non-disclosure agreement. The agreements are presented to us by the companies. It's not an agreement that we're generating from our side.
And just Dr. Pillay, the issue is that governments have to procure the vaccine. As far as I understand it, it can't be private enterprises that enter into these discussions because of the limited quantities that are being made available globally.
Well, there's two issues here. The one is the limited quantities. Companies appear to be committed to solidarity within countries, not necessarily globally, but. And then the third reason is the indemnity issue. So there is a requirement from almost all of the companies that there is an indemnity clause in place, which requires you to accept liability for the product. very different from usually the way we manage medicines, where once you register your medicine, you take full liability for the adverse events, etc. Here we've been told that, well, we did this in record time, the clinical trials were in a short period of time, this is the best we could do, we're not prepared to accept the liability around these vaccines, so we're having to manage that as well.
That is a very interesting point that ties into the messaging that government's now going to have to embark on to ensure that people are willing recipients of this vaccine in order for us to achieve herd immunity. We'll come back to that. Professor van den Heffer, what do you make of Dr. Pillay's assertion that the NDAs really have been the main reason why there's been such little transparency up to this point?
Well, I think that there's an incredible concern with any process that doesn't involve transparency, where you've created a single purchaser, so to speak. Transparency where you've consolidated procurement and where we also need to license centrally as well. So we need to have complete transparency over every aspect of these agreements that are entered into, because there are also distribution agreements. And we're seeing now all sorts of people coming out wanting to grab a portion of these contracts as they come through. So the question is not only the negotiation with the underlying company for vaccines, but also the distribution agreements in the country itself. And whether or not these end up just being people who are taking profits massively out of price that is reached with government. So that aspect is quite key. So the non-disclosure aspect might be considered appropriate only if there are negotiations underway, but the one can still indicate who one's talking to, and as well as disclose the overall strategy and what the targets are and the timing is. So a lot of questions have been raised about whether or not bilateral agreements should have actually been finalized a long time ago. And now we're seeing South Africa move to try and create agreements very late in the day, when other commitments have already been made by a lot of these companies. So there is a great concern that, in fact, we won't access vaccines timeously before we have a second, a third surge. That's if the current one ends. And so we really do need the vaccines. We need them immediately. So I think transparency is absolutely key. And maybe if I make one further point on the approval of the vaccines themselves, because they've still got to actually be approved for procurement in South Africa by SAHPRA, the regulatory authority. And that's going to be absolutely key that that's a pristine process for approval, because you've got a lot of vaccine skepticism, and people are not going to accept the vaccines if they feel there's something dodgy in the overall approval process. So furthermore, it's absolutely crucial that every aspect of this process is pristine and it does not follow the PPE route.
Exactly, and why the public is so sceptical at this point. There's also the issue of funding, and bringing in private sector funding will hopefully add a layer of oversight for trustees of medical schemes as well, that the distribution and the administration of this vaccine is done in a very open and transparent and credible manner. Dr. Pillay, we've been talking about the rollout of the vaccine. Let's turn now to the broader strategy in terms of timelines, who is going to be vaccinated, when, how are those decisions going to be made? Just give us a sense for that strategy that was announced in Parliament last Thursday.
The strategy is a three-phase approach, linked largely to the availability of vaccines. We anticipate that in this first quarter, very limited volumes of vaccine will be available, and those quantities will be increased quite significantly in quarter two and quarter three. So we've aligned our strategy around those timelines. So you will notice that in the first phase, we're targeting our healthcare workers, critical that they are all vaccinated and protected, so that they can continue to deliver the amazing service they've been providing to date. So after moving through phase one, we would then get to phase two, where we're looking at those that are frontline workers, the elderly, those with comorbidities, and those living in those congregate settings. And that would be the biggest cohort and be the longest time. So we're anticipating that that could take us as much as 6 months to get done. We're planning at this stage to make sure that there's registration of all these individuals so we can have a more coordinated and efficient process around the vaccination. And then the last group is basically those that are adults but don't have comorbidities and don't fall into any of the other categories in order to for us to get closer to the herd immunity target that we're seeking. So that's the timeline around it. We're estimating 12 months to get this all done, with the intention of firstly providing protection in the initial phases for the priority group of healthcare workers and then all the other vulnerable groups, and thereafter moving to the broader population.
And you're hoping to get all of this done within 12 months, just on the back of a matchbox. If you look at every South African above the age of 18, it's roughly 40 million South Africans. We're looking at then 80 million doses if it's a two-dose regime. It's going to require, I think, roughly 6,000 vaccinators working daily to do this. What are the logistical arrangements and plans to ensure that this gets done? And how are you bringing in the private sector to assist?
Yeah, so we have about 2,500 vaccinators full-time in the public health system. So clearly we need we have a deficit in terms of bringing on the other vaccinators. We've been talking to the private pharmacies, whether they corporate or individually owned, and they about 3,500 pharmacies. We also have the cohort of GPs that are available through South African Medical Association, all of the others, as well as the occupational health clinics that are available within employer organizations. There are a number of those, and mobile clinics that are available. If you bring all of that online, as we have been doing and are talking to them, on Friday we had quite a constructive meeting with all of those groups. They're busy putting plans together about how they would work with us to make sure that we can roll the second phase out in a seamless way. Provincial departments were part of that conversation as well. So at a local level, there'll be arrangements between many of these private healthcare providers and the provincial departments to identify who'll deliver a service where. I think workplace vaccination programs will work well. I think the public sector will focus predominantly on vulnerable groups that may not be in the workplace and cannot be reached through the usual platforms that I outlined.
Professor van den Heerfer, the presentation made in Parliament that Dr. Pillay has spoken to now has so far come in for some criticism from experts calling it a wish list and so far not very achievable in terms of what is practically being done behind the scenes. What do you make of that critique?
Yeah, so I think in many cases the criticism is understandable. My view is that I would rather have the more ambitious strategy outlined and that becomes and that be emphasized rather than saying we're only going to vaccinate 20% of the population because that is potentially feasible. We don't entirely know how feasible reaching herd immunity is in 12 months, but I'd rather that we try rather than that we didn't. I think we've got a huge challenge on our hands, both in accessing the vaccine as well as in creating the rollout program. I think it's absolutely crucial that we have a public-private arrangement because I think we don't fully know how much we will enhance the capabilities of the overall strategy by combining these platforms. We have many, and it can extend to those even outside of the healthcare sector. So I think that we've got to basically roll this out and keep it going to a particular to the level at which this plan becomes achievable. And I think it's important to try. The other issue is that we do need to be able to monitor everybody that gets vaccinated, because in most cases it's going to be two doses that are administered, and you need to be able to check that people have got both doses after a period of time. You do need to be able to manage and systematically cater for any side effects that result from the vaccine and track them and build them back into the sort of risk management of the overall vaccine program. Now, we don't have a data management system for the whole country, but the question is, how do we put that in place when we're combining these different platforms? Mm-hmm. And it's going to be crucial that we actually manage this very effectively and we have reliable information at every point in time about what is happening.
And Dr. Pillay, to that point, considering that it's unlikely we'll just get the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, we'll probably get a range of different vaccines. If there are two-dose vaccines, you need to ensure that you're monitoring and tracking that someone gets the same vaccine again. What are you thinking with regards to the data management and how to integrate the various platforms in the rollout?
Yeah, no, it's a very important point that Alex raises. I think the data system is critical for this to work. So we're building internally a vaccine monitoring system, an electronic system. But in addition to that, in our meeting with the private sector last week, it's become apparent that a number of private players have developed a electronic system. So we're looking at whether we can bring the two together and have a multitude of systems across the country, because sometimes with IT systems, they fail, there's connectivity issues, et cetera. So putting all our eggs in one basket may be a risk. So I think working with the private sector, we probably may have a number of other systems that become available so that this can be rolled out quickly.
Are there obviously lessons in all of this in the broader context of the NHI in terms of partnerships with the private sector, which is an interesting side story that will obviously develop in the fullness of time. When it comes to the cost of the vaccine, Dr. Pillay, I see the cost has been pegged at around 20 billion. I've seen many other experts say that it should be between 7 to 10 billion. How did you arrive at that figure? How was that 20 billion figure arrived at?
Well, that depends which vaccine you get. So I can tell you that the AstraZeneca vaccine is probably the cheapest. I can tell you that the vaccine from Pfizer or Moderna is much more expensive. I think there's some global publications around what that is. But in addition to that, there's clearly costs around hiring additional staff, all the vaccinators we're talking about. The cost of contacting people, making sure that they all of the consumables, etc., are in place. So there's a number of additional costs. We've worked with an actuary on it, and that's how we came up with that figure as an estimate of what it's going to cost us. Remember, the cost of the vaccine in some cases is actually smaller than the actual cost of the administration that's involved in managing this. So I think we need to just take that into account as part of this.
And in terms of Treasury's thinking, how much has actually been budgeted of that 20 billion?
So Treasury said to us, you go ahead and proceed with the procurement, because this is a very extraordinary process where companies expect you to immediately agree with them the moment they give you an offer, because otherwise they say, well, we're just passing this on to country X or Y if you don't sign up. So we've got a task team between us and Treasury. So each time we have an offer, we take it to them and they look at it and then confirm whether we can sign off. And they've indicated, look, we will find the money somehow. It's not necessarily lying in your budget, but we will make sure that this becomes available. So that's the way we're probably going to operate. We need to be very nimble around this. If we take time through the usual processes of tendering and all of that, we may lose the deal, unfortunately.
And how much, in terms of your modeling and scenario planning, are you expecting of this 20 billion to be funded from private medical schemes who've already come out and said that they are more than willing to talk to government about obviously vaccinating their own members, but also going on a one-for-one with government in a partnership approach?
Yeah, so medical schemes have been very willing to fund a one-for-one as such, and some have even gone further beyond a one-for-one, which is very useful. I think if we can do that, and I think the Solidarity Fund has been keen to support that process, as they have been doing in the past. I think employers as well, in our meeting last week, employers have indicated they're happy to vaccinate their employees and their families. So I think there's a lot of that goodwill that's coming through from the private sector. So National Treasury would clearly have to pick up the tab for those that would not be covered by either medical schemes or the employer groups largely.
And I'm sure companies would be more than willing, considering the cost to the economy of not reaching herd immunity. Alex, it sounds like the department is now making all the right noises. Do we have reason or cause to be concerned still?
Yeah, I think first of all, this is a very unprecedented process for South Africa, and it has to work. It has to be expedited. And regardless of the ambitiousness of the overall program itself, we need to try to get to herd immunity in 2021, despite the fact there's a low probability that we will, but we need to try. There is no, as far as I can tell, no financial barrier to accessing the vaccines themselves, because even I've spoken to large corporates who are also prepared to fund, in fact, the entire public health liability on this. The cost of additional nurses is about 1.2 billion rand. That's if you added every single new nurse to support with the vaccination program. Again, it comes to very a limited amount. I don't really see 20 billion, but I think that it'll be way less than that. But I think that the main thing is that we can't have this process muddied by corruption, which will interfere with a smooth process of delivery. So it does have to be a pristine process. Otherwise, we will have a mess. But I think that at this point in time, it's best that we're trying hard to expedite, that we've got the public-private partnership going, we've got to build in the transparency, we've got to build in the systems, and we've got to get positive cooperation across the board. And we have to have the population confident that the public process itself does not involve anything fishy that might mean that people don't accept the vaccine at the end of the day. And the messaging must be clear and the trust level must be high.
Absolutely. And lessons that we can learn from the PPE corruption scandals of bringing in the Auditor General in early to provide some level in confidence as well. That was Professor Alex van den Heerden, Public Health and Social Security Systems Expert, and Dr. Anban Pillay, Deputy Director General responsible for health regulation and sector-wide procurement of essential medicines in the Health Department, talking about the number one issue in 2021, and that is rolling out the COVID vaccine and trying to achieve herd immunity to get the economy going and to help bring South Africa back to some semblance of normality.